This Do Lectures episode features social innovator, entrepreneur, and founder of a design and tech academy, the Flow Collective, Mara Abrams, recorded live at the Global Event in California, USA in 2016.
I can't believe that I'm here because that moment 6 years ago is when so much of my life, the way that it looks today, began. This is a really magical, special place if you haven't already felt that. And there's kind of a recurring theme of this space throughout my career and my life. So it started in the pool. Actually, I got a call from a friend of mine before then saying, I've nominated you for a social innovation fellowship with the Do Lectures. And this thing is in a couple days. I know it's really last minute, but will you hop on a plane from LA to San Francisco to do this thing? And I was like, well, what's the Do Lectures? And she's like, well, it's kind of like TED meets Burning Man, but on a farm. And I'm like, that's my dream, so yeah. And then I meet Lauren, and this crazy thing happened where I ended up getting a job with the Nike Foundation. And I spent the next few years of my life, I moved to Portland, where Nike's based, and I spent the next few years of my life traveling all over the world. Actually, the first week of my job, I was in Rwanda, Ethiopia. I actually got a call from the moving company, and my stuff was on a truck from LA to Portland, and they said the truck got into a crash and all your stuff is gone, and I'm like in this village in Ethiopia. I'm like, okay, cool. This is a total dream job that I'm on, and then I get dysentery, and it's not the smoothest ride ever, but it was definitely a dream. So I got to work with adolescent girls living in poverty, the 250 million of them who are living in poverty. And my focus was on innovation, which means kind of all the ways that traditional aid and charity are not enough. So looking at entrepreneurship, mobile technology, and new business models to kind of find a new way to empower these girls. So I started working with a lot of entrepreneurs, people from all over the world, particularly across Africa and South Asia, who are creating different products and services that would benefit millions of girls living in poverty. Everything from a mobile education app to a private school system in Kenya to, there's this one guy who calls himself Menstrual Man, and he actually created this radically affordable sanitary pad, and he the way to prototype it, he actually got one of his pads and created this fake blood stream, and it was super crazy, but just being around these entrepreneurs, and actually there's a piece of this story I forgot to mention. We started a program called the Girl Effect Accelerator. So it's a startup accelerator, which is you get a bunch of startups together for a couple weeks, and you bring in these world-class mentors and business coaches, and you help these companies grow. And we did that here in this barn. It was amazing, magical. That's the wonderful Seth Godin coaching some of the entrepreneurs. And being around this energy really started to rub off on me. I got this itch. I'm doing this amazing work, but if these people can start a company and actually scale it to where it's profitable and where they're impacting millions of people's lives, and they're doing it in places where it's really hard to run a startup because of the regulatory challenges, corruption, cultural taboos, all these things, if they can do it, I can do it too. So I decided to take the plunge. I left my job and I started a company. And it's called the Flow Collective. And Vidya here is my co-founder. And the Flow Collective is about creating experiences and workshops for people, companies, organizations, and even communities to help find their flow. So what's flow? Who here knows what a flow state is? Okay, that's pretty good. For those who don't, it's this term in psychology that was coined by a man whose name is very hard to pronounce. It's Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, I think. And what it is when you're just in this zone. It's like you're completely absorbed in this thing that you're doing. It could be a task, it could be writing or work, or it could be surfing, it could be playing music, it could be riding your bike down you know, South America. It could be anything, but the thing that happens is you, it's really, really hard at first. You gotta kind of put in a lot of practice, your 10,000 hours, if you will, and suddenly it becomes effortless. So the effort kind of shapes itself into this ease, and it, you just start to, like, it feels like you're floating. So who here has felt that experience of, like, it's really, really hard, okay, I'm writing something, or I'm writing a wave, or I'm writing a piece of, or I'm writing a paper, and then suddenly I'm floating, and it feels, it's all coming out of me right now. I get this way when I write. I hate writing, but I love it, and so, and like, words on a paper, I'm just like, like, nothing's coming out, and then suddenly it just starts to flow. And so the company is really about helping people get into that state more often, because why it matters is it's where we find joy and meaning. The more flow we have in our lives, the more joyful we are. So this researcher, the psychologist, interviewed people all over the world, and they could be rich people, poor people. In every culture, people experience flow. And this one rock climber described the experience as, you look back in awe at yourself, at what you've done, and it just blows your mind. So it's like that mind blown, like, what did I just do? Like, what is that about? And you want to sit here for a minute with this? I want this to really sink in. And so what's required here is you have to push yourself beyond what you, just beyond what you thought you were capable of. So you have to have like this tremendous challenge, but your skills need to meet that challenge, because if the challenge is too hard, you're just gonna get frustrated, anxious, and give up, I can't do this. If you're overskilled with something, you're just gonna be bored. So you have to kind of play with that sweet spot. You have to find that flow channel. I've heard some research that it's about, this level of challenge is about 4% beyond what you're capable of today. So that you push yourself beyond that 4% or whatever it is for you, and you master your skills to the point where you can now reach that challenge, that's where we get into that state. So I was also, you know, as I was thinking about this company, realizing that I'm like actually not that great at this flow thing. Like, I'm like checking Instagram all the time, Facebook, and I'm distracted, and I got a million emails to send, and I have this project and this project going on. And I thought, well, if I'm gonna be preaching this stuff, I better get really good at it. And so I did something a bit radical for me. I went on this Vipassana meditation retreat. Has anyone done that here? We're like looking at each other like, dude. So Vipassana is a completely silent meditation retreat. You step in, you hand in your phone, and there's other people around you, but you're not allowed to talk to them. You can't even read, you can't write. It's just you alone with your thoughts, which is a very scary place sometimes. And this is happening days on end. And the benefit is that at some point you start to break through. So the day that I was supposed to get to this retreat, I had this all day, all hands on deck meeting, working on something really, really hard. And towards the end of the meeting, I was just thinking about getting to this retreat. I'm gonna be late, I have to rush through the meeting. And I wasn't really present in that room anymore. I was trying to get to the retreat. And once I got to the retreat, I mean, all I had to do was sit there, but I started going crazy. I'm meditating, I'm looking into my mind, I'm completely silent, and I'm just like, whoa, like, there's some crazy shit going on in there. And I think by day two, I was totally convinced that my house was on fire. It's like, it's definitely on fire right now. Nobody can reach me, I can't talk to anyone, I'm like freaking out. And I actually cheated. I went to check my phone just to like really make sure that my house wasn't on fire, and it wasn't. And at a certain point, you start to practice calming the monkey mind a bit. I stopped thinking about all those emails that I needed to send. You know, when I first got there, I was just so frustrated that I really needed to work on stuff. Like, I had this big project going, And like, why would I sign up for this thing that's going to take me away from my work? And I finally started breaking through. I started to get some distance from my mind and observe it. And what I saw happening was that, you know, when I was at that meeting, I was desperately trying to get to that retreat. And once I got to the retreat, I wanted to be back in that meeting. And I'm looking at my life like it's a cycle of like wanting to get from here to here to here to here. And like, what's the point of that? Like, I was really like, I had this moment where I thought, what's the point? Like, what am I doing? What is this life? Is this what I'm doing? I'm just going from one thing to the next. And yes, I've accomplished a lot of great things, but what about like once I, you know, accomplish something that I'm already on to, like, what do I have to accomplish next and next and next? And I'm never actually satisfied. So what I was doing there was kind of quieting that monkey mind, because you need that level of focus and you need to kind of, you know, quiet the mind in order to actually achieve this state of flow. And so what I was doing was I was practicing focusing my attention, which is what flow so much is about. That's the retreat center I was in. It was very beautiful, but I wanted to scream at those trees at the time. I came back. I was so productive. This was me, like words flowing out of me and just all this wonderful work and oh my God. So I started digging into this concept of the company again and realizing that throughout my career, the common thread had been this sort of group flow. Like, it's not just me in my own flow state. Like, I've been immersed with these amazing, diverse people coming together and challenging ourselves beyond what we thought possible, and then looking back in awe. And one of those times was in Cape Town, South Africa. So I had the amazing honor of being on something called Unreasonable at Sea, which was another program, an accelerator for startups, but this time it was happening on the semester at SeaShip, which is essentially a floating university. The ship goes from country to country all over the world, and you're supposed to, you know, every time you stop in a particular port, you're learning something. So this time we had entrepreneurs who were, you know, giving their pitches of their startups in new places. They were forming partnerships and all these things, and I got to be a part of that. And I started getting involved with a class on entrepreneurship. So this is a class of about 100 undergrads, mostly Americans, mostly fairly wealthy people. It was taught by George Kemble, the founder of the Stanford D School, which is Stanford's Design Thinking Academy. It's a way to eke out people's creativity and help them prototype new things and design experiences. So I got to be a part of this class, and these 100 students were about to descend upon Cape Town. And we thought, we got to get these kids out of the classroom. We can talk about all these concepts of, you know, creating change and entrepreneurship, but, you know, until you actually, like, go out there and do something, you're not really doing much. So what we did is we found 100 young people about their age who were living in a very, very poor township called Khayelitsha, and extremely segregated. You can kind of feel the aftermath of apartheid there. And so these kids who like really have not experienced any sort of poverty like that, we're going to be kind of working together with these kids who probably hadn't experienced, you know, American college students, their lives. And so we thought about designing this experience where they could sort of get into this group flow together. And so what we did is we had them start to map out, you know, how can people connect? Like, that's the one challenge we posed to them. How do people from across these different worlds connect? And rather than just have a dialogue about them, about that, and ask each other those questions, we actually had them doing things. So they started building these prototypes. They started doing these empathy maps where they're mapping out each other's lives and experiences, their families, their relationships, their school, their activities. So really empathizing with one another. And then actually starting to come up with these ideas, and not just write them down, but actually build prototypes of them. So they use cardboard and pipe cleaners and tape and sticky notes to actually create, here's, you know, a mobile phone, for example. Here's how you would create an experience that would bridge these two cultures that had never actually talked before. And so, as I was looking at this room of 200 kids in this township, you know, watching them in during the breaks dance together, and by the end they were hugging and crying and adding each other on Facebook, and they wanted to maintain these lifelong friendships. I just looked back in awe, because for the last few days I hadn't slept. I was nearly hallucinating. All these crazy things started going wrong. Like the day before, there were only 5 kids signed up, and I, you know, it was a really, really, it was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my career. And it was also the best. I mean, I just looked back, these kids working together and building things together and doing things together and getting to, into their flow state. And I look back in awe, like, mind blown. So I started thinking about, you know, once I started this company, I started to think about, like, what is this group flow? What's happening? And there's actually been some research done on this. And it's very similar to a personal flow state, where you have to have, you know, the challenge, and you have to rise to the challenge. You have to have these shared goals, a shared purpose. You have to have immediate feedback on your progress and all these things. But the one difference of, you know, getting into a personal flow versus a group flow is that in a group flow, you find more joy, because you're connecting with humans in a way that you wouldn't be able to do just sitting around. So the company is about creating more of these experiences around the world. And as we were starting it was about a year ago, and I joined a delegation of entrepreneurs and business leaders to go to Cuba. And I didn't know anything about Cuba. It was my first time there. I didn't know what to expect. I was really just there to learn and immerse myself, and we, you know, I was with the Aspen Institute. They run these programs where you really immerse yourself in a country, in a culture, and you're meeting with business leaders and forming these partnerships. And this is Cuba here. And I'm starting to realize that there's like this little bit of a startup scene, which is like super weird, because it's only been, you know, like the private sector has only been around in Cuba for the last few years. And the way that startups look in Cuba is very different from the rest of the world. There's certain, you know, challenges and parameters, to put it lightly, around how you form a company. It, you know, it could be a co-op or, you know, some other thing, but or a cuenta propista, which is, means you have, you're basically a sole proprietor, and you can hire other sole proprietors, but it's not, you can't form a company in the way that you do elsewhere. And so I'm starting to dig into this. Our tour guide was on the bus, and she was using this app on her phone. It looked like Yelp, and she was, a couple of us were asking her, like, what is this app? Like, what are you doing? And who made it? She's like, I don't know. I just use the app. Like, okay, we got to track down the guy who made this, and somehow we did. And we invited him to get to dinner, and it was unbelievable. This guy had an app that was like Yelp, and you're probably thinking, well, what's the big deal? They don't have internet. This guy has scaled a company to like hundreds of thousands of users in a place that doesn't have internet, which is insane. So the way it works is you actually have to go to like a physical cell phone kiosk to get the app updated. Like imagine you get an update on your phone, like on an app, and every time you get, you know, like you need to update your apps, you have to go to the store. Like imagine that. You know, I discovered this thing called the paquete, which some people call internet in a box. It is literally just a hard drive of information that's distributed in the tens or hundreds of thousands, where people get their weekly Game of Thrones, they get the New York Times, they get all these things, media and information from the internet, but it's just all offline. Now, that's starting to change slowly, very slowly. Some people are, you know, do have access now, but it's for most Cubans, It's almost impossible. So I was so inspired in meeting these entrepreneurs. And in talking with them, I realized that they were really looking to connect with global mentors. They needed some, you know, kind of some basic sort of MBA-like skills and knowledge. And I felt that we, Americans and other international business leaders, can learn so much from their culture. This culture of resolver, which means to resolve. This term was sort of coined after the fall of the Soviet Union, when the Cubans went into this special period of rationing. And it roughly translates to, we'll figure it out. So just like that, the app developer is figuring out how to make this work in a country without internet. And you know, there was another entrepreneur we worked with who was a professor, and she couldn't afford professional clothing to wear when she was teaching her classes, because that, you know, the average state salary for a Cuban is, you know, $30-$40 a month. And so she couldn't afford clothes, so she started this online clothing exchange. And so that's kind of this other, you know, example of people are just figuring it out. And I just wanted to like dig into that more. So I started a program. This is actually the one spot Google put up very recently in the last few months, the one free Wi-Fi spot in the country, and people just kind of gather around this space to use the internet. So the program's called Incubate, and it literally means to incubate oneself. Sort of a play on words, because we wanted it to be some sort of business incubator. But first, we really had to help people develop and find themselves. So the workshop, we went back a few months later and started. I had an amazing team come together to do this. We started off with a game of rock, paper, scissors. It was a group game. You know, there were like pairs of people going rock, paper, scissors. And the loser actually then had to go on to cheer on their opponent until you keep going. The opponents play each other until everybody's all chanting this one winner's name. And it was like this wonderful way to bring people together. These are people who really didn't know that much about each other. We have all these preconceived notions of Cuba and who these Cubans are, and you know, it's kind of clouded by our opposing governments that have been hostile towards one another for the last 50 years. You know, and suddenly, a year and a half ago, Obama makes this announcement that we're going to restore diplomatic relations with Cuba. And so, you know, that conversation's happening here, but what about the people? How do we get to know each other? So let's throw them into a game, which is essentially putting them into this flow state. And so from there, we started sort of leveling up. Like, that was a very fun, quick exercise to bring us together into a flow. But what about these much more challenging situations of how do you get around these like enormous bureaucratic complexities to start a business? And how can Cubans and Americans start to work together across the Florida Straits for the first time in 50 years? What's amazing, see that building in the background? That's the US Embassy. That had just opened after 50 years. The embassy had just opened, and we're doing this workshop, bringing Cubans and Americans together and building things together, overlooking that. It was very symbolic. And we're not just discussing these things, but we stood up and we were doing things. We started creating business models. We started actually working together on each one another's businesses and helping each other grow. And by the end, we were this cohesive group of people who were just working on this challenge and then using these our respective diverse skills to rise to that challenge together. And I'm pretty sure this is the first time ever that Cubans and Americans have come together in Cuba to actually build real things together, real startups and enterprises and companies and products and services that would help the Cuban people. So that's me with a completely shit-eating grin on my face, because I was looking back at this room of like these people all working together, and that was my mind-blown moment. Like, what did I just do? You know, it was so hard just to even get this project off the ground. I was worried that I would end up in a Cuban prison or something. And somehow, you know, we're, you know, going really deep into all the legal complexities. You know, there's still this embargo that's in place. And we did this, and we did it again a few months after that, and we're doing it again in October, and we're repeating these workshops. And actually, the next step is to create a co-working space and a more permanent incubator program. And actually, start to bring some of the Cubans to the U.S., do some exchanges. So it's becoming this real thing. It has a life of its own. So in all of this work, I had this light bulb moment where I realized that flow is not just this state that makes us happy, brings us joy, but it also can be a tool for diplomacy. And it's a tool for diplomacy because rather than just having heads of state negotiating with one another in a room somewhere, that obviously has to happen too. But I think for diplomacy to really work on a deep level, you have to have people connecting with people. In fact, Obama, when he made that announcement, created a new category of visa called people to people. So you still can't travel there just as a tourist, but if you say that you're going to go and engage with people and work together with them, then you can go. And the reasoning behind that is because people to people is really what makes diplomacy work. And I would take that a step further. It's not just people talking with people, it's people doing things together. So really what this group flow thing is about empathy, having a shared purpose, and action. And so this is the model that I have in my mind for diplomacy. So next steps we want to do more of these things in other countries. We've been exploring Myanmar as a potential place. We want to bring a group flow to companies and organizations that are struggling with particular challenges and bringing a diverse set of people together to rise to that challenge, and helping individuals through different workshops get into these flow states. So how can you find your flow? So you have to turn off your inner critic. You can't be present and immersed in this thing and having your mind blown if you're just constantly like, oh, I can't do that, And it's easier said than done. I struggle with my inner critic quite a bit. So this is actually the brain of a freestyle rapper. These scientists actually put a freestyle rapper in an MRI machine and studied their prefrontal cortex. So the areas of the brain that are lit up are responsible for innovation, creativity, pattern recognition, those types of things. And the area that's shutting down in blue is that inner critic. You imagine someone winning a freestyle battle, but also thinking oh, I suck, that it doesn't work. So what actually happens in the brain is if you shut off your inner critic, you can kind of start to get into the flow state, and then the brain sort of conspires for you to even get into more of a flow state. You actually get a big hit of dopamine, which is essentially when you're smoking crack, you get a hit of dopamine, so it's kind of like crack for your mind. My friend Krista likes to point out that it's also present when you're having an orgasm, so whatever you prefer. But what was happening is that the brain is it's working to get you even more of a state of presence. So once you find your flow, just roll with it, ride it. You can't multitask because you're multitasking, it just doesn't work. You have to focus on one thing at a time. We all have these boring tasks that we have to do. We have to mow the lawn, and we got to shop for groceries and all these things. But you can turn that into play. And by creating challenges around certain repetitive things, you can actually start to get into a little bit of a flow state. Researchers have also looked at assembly line workers, and the ones who are able to find purpose in their work are the ones who are kind of trying to beat their own record and turning it into a game and playing and actually, really trying to challenge themselves in some way and rising to that challenge. You also just have to sit sometimes. You have to be. This is a really awesome place to be and also to share what we do. But you can't just do. And this is kind of what I was doing before, I felt. When I had that moment when I realized I was going from one thing to the next, I wasn't stopping to stay still. And you need those moments of reflection to make sure that it's not just flow state to get to the next flow state. You know, there's real purpose and meaning behind it, because this is where we find meaning in our lives. So in order to do, you have to be. Embrace the hustle. So many of us have been conditioned from the time we were young to loathe school, to look at work like it's the grind, you know, the just like this stressful, like even when we love our work, which so many of us here do, it's like we feel like it's this like thing that we have to kind of get away from. But, you know, the people who get most into a state of flow, particularly in work, are the happiest. And sometimes we just don't realize it. Like sometimes we just have to kind of change our perspective on what work is. If work really is about having purpose and being able to rise to a challenge and then, you know, having your mind blown, then maybe work isn't so bad. Maybe you should just embrace that hustle, because it's not in leisure time, just sitting on the beach necessarily, where we're finding joy. And this has actually been researched very thoroughly. Yes, it's important to be and to take breaks and to have vacations, but after a certain point, you can't just sit there. You really have to go out and do something and hustle, and that's where we find joy. And finally, I would love for you guys to kind of go off and, you know, when you're having dinner tonight, talk about the last time you experienced flow. Talk about where you most often feel flow. And then maybe you might start to find some commonalities. You know, maybe you can start to flow together. Maybe you can start this next program, this next thing where you're getting into this state and you're connecting with other humans, because that's what this whole thing is about. It's about connection and joy and meaning and purpose.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out. For our weekly curation of wonder and optimism, sign up to our newsletter by visiting thedolectures.com/newsletter.